This is Dak Prescott, and you're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome to Faith on the Field Show. I am Rob Motti with my beautiful wife, Remy. It is great to be with you, as always, on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Also on 97.9 ESPN Radio, Tallahassee Sports Monster, 107.5 Alive, and Rhythm Mix Radio. Our guest this week is one of the best defensive linemen in NFL history, Jared Allen. He played for the Chiefs, the Vikings, the Bears, and finished his career playing one season with the Carolina Panthers and went to a Super Bowl, the only time he went to a Super Bowl that year, and they lost to the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning. And during the conversation, which you'll hear coming up, a very fascinating conversation. He's a funny dude. He's energetic, just like he was on the field. And you'll hear a lot from Jared Allen as far as the Super Bowl matchup coming up, Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs, about his career. He almost broke Michael Strahan's sack record. He had 22 sacks in one season. Strahan had 22.5. And Allen needed 3.5 sacks in the final game to get there. There was also a sack against Dan Orlovsky, which has been replayed over and over on highlight films because he made him step out of the back of the end zone for a safety, and he got credit for the sack. He didn't actually hit him on that play. So you'll hear that conversation. But when we talk about his faith, Jared talks about a moment that really kind of started changing his thoughts about his faith. He said he grew up as a Christian, but he was just kind of doing his own thing. He even got into some trouble, some incidents when he was in Kansas City. But there was a particular chapel service where the team chaplain said to everyone, I believe, I don't think it was just to Jared, but to the group that was gathered, if you were arrested for being a Christian, mm-hmm. is there enough evidence to convict you?
That's so deep.
Right?
That's so deep.
And he said that really got him thinking about how he was living his life and what he was doing and how he was really showing other people. You know, he said, the people around me, my family, my friends, they knew I'm a Christian, but not everybody didn't know. And he ultimately said that it also, he stopped cussing, he says. He calls it cussing. We call it cursing.
Yeah.
And he said he just stopped. He referred to a Bible passage in James, and I'll read that coming up. But is there enough evidence to convict you? And I thought we should talk about that because it's good for all of us to think about. If you were arrested for being a Christian, which you're not in this country, we have the freedom to, obviously, freedom of religion. But do people know? And it leads you to think, because sometimes what are we doing that lets others know? It's not about shouting it from the rooftops. It's not about beating anyone over the head with a Bible. It's not about proclaiming you're a Christian. But how are you living? Like, so for Jared, he said just a little couple minor changes here, a couple tweaks. He said, I just stopped using foul language. And
right.
And I understand, because I was there with him. Like, for me, that transformation came, although I'll slip up occasionally at home.
I do, too.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But
which is
kind of crazy. It's kind of weird. Like, we'll slip up in front of each other, you and me, but we don't slip up anywhere else. So we need to do a better job in front of each other.
I think it's more venting than anything.
I know.
Just venting.
It is.
Like,
it is.
You know, and it's still not good, but still it's just you're just venting.
But I had that same
frustrated.
The same thing happened with me. Like, actually for me, it wasn't.
I'm not justifying it, by the way. It's still
I know.
Bad.
We can't be justifying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, the moment came not right away. Like, I accepted Christ in 2010, but it came a couple more years later. It really came when you were pregnant. And I was like, all
right. That puts you over the edge, huh?
Yeah, no, I was like, all right, now I don't want. And then I knew we were having girls, and I was like, that's it. I got to clean it up, right? I got to clean it up. But beyond that, because a lot of people may not use foul language, and they just aren't believers. That's, you know, which is fine. That's your thing. Yeah. But is there enough evidence to convict you as a Christian is kind of a thought that, well, yeah, people know me now. Mm-hmm. But I think back and I go, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. Like, at what point did it become more? Now, I'm in the spotlight. It's different. And people know me. And I've written books. And I do this show, obviously, and all that stuff. But for everyone out there, just think about those words.
You know, fun fact, I have never, ever cursed in Arabic. It's my, you know.
Your native language.
My native language.
That's crazy.
Like, ever. Not a day in my life. And I'm 37. Never cursed in Arabic. And to me,
you're still
and
on the cursing part of this conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I think I'm cussing. Thinking about it right now. I don't like the word cussing. So I don't I'm either.
But
cursing.
It's a Southern thing.
Yeah, and I think it's because, so when you grow up and you know the magnitude of the word,
yeah,
it hits different. So I know like what that means. So I never do it. Like, I just never do. So when I moved here to America when I was 15, and then, like, you know, the F word is, like, flying every other word, you know.
Did you even know what it meant?
No, like, to me, it was kind of like, it was hilarious. Because I was like, why are they using that as a curse word? It does not make any sense. Because it's like, doesn't make any sense, you know. It's not a curse, technically, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, but.
See, now you got me wanting to go to James and read what Jared said.
Right.
But go ahead.
It's just like, it's too. So I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying, to me, when I say like a bad word, like on the fly or something, like, and I get frustrated, it actually doesn't mean as much to me, because I would never do it in Arabic is what I'm saying. Like, I would never do it in Arabic, but in English, sometimes it slips up because I'm like, I don't even know. Like, it doesn't mean that much to me. But anyways, I'm cleaning it up. I'm cleaning it up.
All right. So the Bible, the Bible verse that Jared was referring to in James chapter 3, and I'll start from the beginning. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. I'm reading from the NLT version. Mm-hmm. Going down a little bit to 3:6, the tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. He's talking about the tongue and how the words that come out of our mouth, you know, and then
nine,
with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the part we're thinking about. We use our mouth to praise our Lord and Savior and God our Father, but yet at the same time, we use our mouth and our tongue and our words to curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. So when you read that, it really puts it in perspective. Now it's got me like thinking, you know, next time somebody annoys me and I may say something under my breath, out of the same mouth, here continuing, out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring?
Ouch.
My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. That's pretty convicting when you read that, right? Yeah. I'm gonna post that up there for me to look at. But at the same time,
I'm gonna frame that like I frame other things in the house. Yeah.
As we began, and I was talking about, is there enough evidence to convict you as a Christian? And what really got Jared thinking about the way I'm living my life, the way I'm acting out my faith, the way I'm acting out my Christianity. And sometimes we go, like, you know, it's not about the cross that you might wear as a chain, or in my case, any of the tattoos that I have. Jesus, it's not about that. It's not about a post on social media. It's not about what you put in your bio on social media,
that's
Twitter,
how you
whatever,
live in your life.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really more about how are we living our life?
Yeah.
How are we living our life? Because people will see through you if you profess one thing and live out another. And I feel like the best way we can really show our faith and show that we're Christians is how we live our life, how we love others, how we forgive others, how we handle adversity, how we react in awful situations.
Right. I think we all have areas of our lives that needs cleaning up.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily just
the tongue.
Because we're not
perfect.
We're not perfect, and we're not going to point fingers. And everybody has an area that they really need to just come in with a broom and just start sweeping. You know what I mean?
I know, I do.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. I mean, you cannot sit here or anybody sit there and just say, perfect. Nobody's perfect ever. So
I honestly don't feel I'll ever get there either.
Well, it's a work in progress always, mm-hmm. always. Like, the whole Christianity walk is about cleaning up, like sweeping. All day mm-hmm. long, you're just sweeping.
Sweeping your own mess.
Yeah. I mean, all day long, I sweep anyways after my kids, and that's what you have to do as a Christian, like, in your mm-hmm. life. Just keep sweeping every single day. And that's just how it is. It's just Jesus comes in to sweep and purifies. Like, that's what he does. Like, it just, and sometimes you know, something like that strikes you, like a verse, and then you start sweeping that area. And next thing you read, and sweep that area too. And you just keep going. You keep cleaning it up. It's all about cleaning up the mess. So there's no condemnation here. Like, we all have issues and we all have sin and we all have problems. But the thing is, you cannot live on the edge, though. You have to make a decision whether you're going to be deep water Christian or right there on the boundaries and shallow end Christian. Like, you have to kind of make a decision. Which one are you? Are you deep end water kind of Christian, where you're going to take care of the areas and start sweeping, start cleaning? Or you're going to stand on the edge there and just say, nah, it's too deep, I don't like it, I'm just going to stand right here and just pretend. So you gotta pick.
I was that guy for a while. I was halfway in.
Yeah.
I was halfway in, halfway out. And I was halfway in, halfway out, I was doing my own thing, living my life, going to church on Sunday, but then living my, 6 days a week, doing whatever I wanted to do.
How'd that work out for you?
It certainly didn't.
Yeah, it didn't.
I hit rock bottom.
Right. And then would you be convicted as a Christian?
No.
Exactly. So no. the evidence would be none.
Yeah, there was no evidence.
So, but when you're deep water Christian, the evidence will be true and significant, regardless of the little sins that's still there that you're getting cleaned up. So it's okay. So if you're listening to this or you're thinking, oh, I have so much to clean up, I don't think I'll be convicted.
Fine. Yeah, that's
fine.
That's
not true. You make sure you're living, like I live every day. Like, I can tell you with, I'm 100% convinced I'll be like a lifetime in jail. You know what I'm saying? Lifetime. You know what I mean? Like, there'll be no coming out of that cell. And that's okay with me. But am I perfect? No, I'm not. I'll be convicted, but I'm not perfect. But at the same time, I refuse to be on the edge and not convicted. You know, so Jesus wants to walk with you. He wants you to come in and jump right in and start getting cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Because it takes jumping in the water to get cleaned up by the water. He is the living water. So you cannot say, oh, I'm just going to be a shallow end Christian. I don't know about this. Like, it's too much. It's too much that I do drugs. I go to clubs. It's okay. It's all right.
We all have our past, or we all have things that we need help with. We all need areas of our life that we need. Like, if we were perfect, what do we need a savior for? If we were sinless, why did Jesus take that cross? He took that cross. He took that to pay the price for our sins, knowing full well that we will continually be sinners.
Right.
And it doesn't mean accept it. You know, I don't accept my failures. I don't. I'm not happy with them.
Yeah.
I want to change the areas where I fail. I want to do better. Like, I'll know at the end of the day, and sometimes maybe I do it too much to myself, but sometimes at the end of the day, I'm like laying in bed after sitting with the girls, and I'm thinking, I shouldn't have said this.
Mm-hmm. But that's okay. You're taking inventory.
Maybe I shouldn't have done this.
That's fine.
Maybe I should have handled that better.
I do that all the time.
Do you really?
Oh, my gosh,
I do it daily, and I feel like, yeah, I got to clean that up. Yeah, I got to get better there.
But see, if you weren't in deep water, you wouldn't do that because you're not shallow Christian. I was in a shallow too. When you're in a shallow water, you don't take any inventory.
As much.
Because you're like, who cares, you know? But when you're in deep water, imagine yourself swimming in deep water, right? You're going to have to keep kicking.
Me personally, I drown because I can't swim.
Right. You're like a rock in deep water. But we're just going to pretend you know how to swim.
Right.
If you know how to swim, you're going to have to keep kicking, right, to keep yourself up. But if you're not, you're going to sink. So that's the same thing with Christian. Gotta keep kicking. Kick with Jesus. If you keep kicking with Jesus, he's going to keep you afloat. He's going to keep you going. He's going to keep you swimming. So it's kind of like Dory. Just keep swimming. All right? Just keep swimming.
Think about it.
Yeah.
As we head into bringing you the interview, is there enough evidence to convict you as a Christian if you were arrested? And if not, what areas of your life would you like to clean up? What areas of your life would you like to work on? I know those areas. I know the areas that I have, and I want to continue to work on them. Up next, you'll hear from Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist Jared Allen. You're listening to Faith on a Field Show with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Karen University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Karen prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at Karen.edu.
Since 1930, the Heritage family has proudly served the communities of South Jersey. From humble roots, Heritage's dairy stores now operate 33 convenient locations. Their desire is to become your convenience store of choice, not just because of their welcoming atmosphere, but because of their fresh quality products. Heritage's milk is still the sweetest. Coffee's hot and fresh, and Heritage's full-service delis offer the best local ingredients prepared and sliced on site, far exceeding the competition. Heritage's Dairy Stores. It's not just our name, it's our heritage.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc., is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have two daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
Hey, this is Jerome Bettis, former running back from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show. I am Rob Mahdi with Remy. If you're tuning in for the first time on radio, you can go to faithonthefieldshow.com and find every episode since we launched in April 2017. We've had an awesome lineup, incredible guests. You can listen anytime at your convenience. We're also on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, as well as iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Faith on the Field. If you want to sign up for our weekly email list, we will send each episode right to your inbox. Make sure you also follow us on our personal social media platforms. I'm at Rob Mahdi on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and at Real Rob Mahdi on Instagram. Remy is at Remy Mahdi on all her platforms. We'll let you know about some of the speaking appearances and other events that we're hosting. You can also go to my YouTube channel and listen to some of my recent messages, some of my interviews with the athletes. Some are longer form, so you could check those out there too as well. Our guest this week, Jared Allen, played 12 seasons at defensive end in the NFL with the Kansas City Chiefs, Minnesota Vikings, Chicago Bears, and Carolina Panthers. He was a four-time All-Pro, a five-time Pro Bowler, and Jared is one of the 15 modern-era player finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame Class of 2021. He is one of six players who's a finalist for the first time and one of four players who made that elite cut in his first year of eligibility. So I sat down with Jared. We talked about the Super Bowl matchup coming up between the Buccaneers and the Chiefs, his entire career almost breaking the NFL sack record, his Jared Allen Homes for Wounded Warriors Foundation, and of course, his faith. Here's my conversation with Jared Allen.
Jared, you began your career with the Kansas City Chiefs. Is it safe to assume, as you look at this Super Bowl, Chiefs and Tampa Bay, you have some rooting interest there, and or how do you look at it?
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, I still know a lot of people in the Chiefs organization, so always great to see them win. What an amazing fan base. I was a little torn last week, I'm not going to lie. I grew up a Bills fan, and I'm a huge like Steve Tasker fan, so I was a little torn, you know, and then my own coaches. So, you know what? I think I'm excited to see – I do have to admit this too. Like, I was always a guy that thought kind of Tom Brady, he was obviously phenomenal. He's great. But sometimes you think like, okay, is it the duo? Is it the system? Him and Belichick, and to see him go out and do what he did with Tampa, you know, later in his career, that sold me as that dude is amazing. So, you know, I don't know. I kind of want to see greatness like succeed. So you kind of wish, you know, maybe you root for, you know, them to win the, you know, be the first team to host and win the Super Bowl in their hometown, or do you want to see the Chiefs continue to win? So, you know, my heart is with the Chiefs. Obviously, that's where I grew my career. But, you know, part of me still just kind of be cool to see greatness unfold that way. And Mahomes obviously will have plenty of years to chase all these records down. But, yeah, so I'm a little torn. I'm 70% Chiefs, 30% Bucks.
Well, you just mentioned Brady, and you began your career 4 years into his and finished, and here you are, a finalist for the Hall of Fame. And my man's still out there going strong at 43 years old, trying to win his like, do you ever just sit back and marvel, like, how's this guy doing it?
Well, a little different position, you know what I mean? The quarterbacks are a little prima donna. They don't get hit, you know. We see the problem is defensive linemen, offensive linemen, most everybody else, receivers not so much, or DBs, but the interior, we hit on Wednesday, we hit on Thursday. We semi hit on Friday. We get a Saturday walkthrough. We hit on Sunday. So for us, it's like 4 days a week of just banging our heads against the wall. It's remarkable to see a man like that. But obviously he takes care of himself. He's very diligent about his craft, I should say, and he's a master of his craft. And he continually works on it. So that's what I really respect. Obviously the results are the results, but when you see work ethic like that and you see the determination and the grit to push through and defy the odds, that's where I kind of, you're crazy if you don't nod your head to it and say, wow, and have respect for that.
Well, Jared, for all the talk about Brady, Mahomes, and the two offenses, both of these teams, especially the Bucs, they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for their defense and how they played, especially against the Saints. Both teams have some guys up on that defensive line that I think you would look at and go, man, I really like the way they play the game. Is there anyone, whether it's JPP, Frank Clark, whoever it may be, that you look at on those defensive lines and say, that's my kind of guy?
Yeah, so I think JPP, I obviously played against him when I was playing, and, he had the injury, but it seems like he's starting to kind of make a resurgence. I like the way he plays. He's been consistent throughout the years. You know, you got Sue inside. I'm a big fan of Sue. Sue's nasty. He might not be getting the sack numbers that he used to get, but that dude is a presence, and he's just nasty up front, which is awesome. I haven't watched a whole lot of the two teams, but from the games I have seen, it's kind of the tale of two tapes. The Chiefs defense to me seems a little more finesse, where the Bucs defense seems a little more stout up front. And that front seven of the Bucs, I mean, they look pretty darn good. Like I said, you got, I think, what is it? Barnett had a good game against the Packers. And then, you know, who has been impressing. I don't know. I can't remember his first name, but White, the linebacker for,
Devin White.
Yeah, there we go. Sorry. He's been real, real fun to watch. So, I look at, and then, you know, Chiefs, I think the Chiefs probably have, you know, their back end, you know, has been playing well. You know, Tyrann Mathieu, he had a good game. So it's going to be interesting to see. And that gets lost when you got great quarterbacks and you got, you know, offense that are putting up a whole bunch of points. So I think you're right. I think the Super Bowl is going to come down to which defense can hold it, and turnovers. And again, I got to root for my guy, Antoine Winfield Jr. I played with his dad. His dad's amazing. Dude, Antoine, one of the best corners I ever played with. So it'd be good to see him have a little success out there too.
You had 136 career sacks. Did you get Brady at all? Is he on that list?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What do you remember about that game?
First play of the game, sack. It might have been my rookie year, too. I don't know. I can't remember. My rookie, first or second year. We lost, though. I think we lost. I'm not sure if I ever beat him. I've sacked him, but I don't think I've ever beat him. I have to go back and check the record books on that. But, yeah, but instead, I tell you what, actually, the one I remembered most, not besides the first play of the game sack, they ran this little fake, you know, X stop deal. And I got through the line so quick, I didn't really know who to hit. So I hit the running back and tackle him. Brady still had the ball and throwing it for completion. And my coach was just like, next time tackle them both. Like, what are you doing? I always need a free shot at the quarterback. Hit the quarterback. I'm like, my bad, coach.
Oh, man. Well, there's one of the sacks of all of those you had in your career that's been played on like so many highlights and bloopers. You probably know as soon as I'm going to say it, Dan Orlovsky ran out of the end zone for a safety. You made him run out of the end zone. Like, you remember that play?
I laugh about that a lot because, you know, Kevin and I were in the heated sack race in the beginning of the year, and that came through. And I can't remember. He might have had four in that game or something. I don't know. But we were laughing because there was one in one game. Him and I were racing to the sideline to see, you know, whoever's closest gets credit for it. And so I came around. I figured I was going to get close to a sack anyway, just because they, they left me one-on-one with a tight end. And you know, when I was playing, tight end were considered half people. They weren't even real people. You had to just get disregarded. I came around. I remember I was just cracking up, and I saw him run out of the back of the end zone, and I'm the only one there. So I'm laughing because I'm like, it's the easiest sack safety I've ever gotten in my life. And I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, there's no way he's actually running. At first, I'm like, he has to know he's out of bounds, but he dude kept running. I laugh about it today. Everybody, you know, they give me it's what it's like. What I said, it's a blooper. It's a highlight. I've spoke with Dan about it. You know, he makes comments to it. It was quite entertaining. But I think Kevin was more pissed that I got a sack on it and closed the gap. And obviously, I overtook him later in the career. But yeah, it was a fun little time.
Well, Dan's a good dude. Well, in 2011, you had 22 sacks. I think you had a sack Josh McCown like 3.5 times in a final game to get to 22, finished half a sack shy of Michael Strahan's record, which I don't know if it bothers you, but yeah, Favre gave it to him. Like, did that ever annoy you? Like, man, here I am fighting to get these sacks, and
no,
got it handed to him.
You know what? Because look at Dan. Like, you know, one of my career sacks is Dan running out the back of the end zone. You know what I mean? So the rules are in place for where the rules are at. I tell you what I tell everybody gets me is that my 23rd sack that year, I can remember the ones I missed. I hit Drew Brees right as he threw, and the ball went forward instead of back, and they called it an incomplete pass. But I had a sack on Aaron Rodgers in our Monday night game up in Green Bay. He got the ball, stepped over the pocket, dropped it, right? Picked it back up, you know, took off. I ended up sacking him. They gave me a sack. I come out of the game with two sacks. Well, Wednesday, they changed it to a team sack because they called that a muff.
Oh.
Right? And, you know, when I first got in the league, a muff, you know, if the ball went over the quarterback's head and he grabbed it or fell on it, the first person to touch him got the sack. And then they changed that to a team sack and didn't give any individual stat for it. So, yeah, my 23rd sack was – I actually tackled Aaron. He still could have thrown the ball. He regained possession. He rolled out. Still could have thrown it. I tackled him. Team sack, not my sack. There's the record.
I'm putting an asterisk next to there. Allen should get
that. I fought it for years, and they kept telling me, nope, team sack. So I said, all right. But no, I don't – too straight. I mean, to get to 22, right, to get to 21 and a half at that time, and I know Gastineau was probably sitting there saying, nope, that's still my record. It takes so much effort in to get that. Tell me the difference is you don't miss, right? You don't realize even the greatest pass rushers how many times you'll miss in a career. And we used to there used to be a stat that one of my old D-line coaches used to tell me that if you make one out of every 17, if you're successful, one out of every 17 pass rushes, right, you'll end the year with roughly 16 and a half sacks and should lead the league, right? So what do you do with your 16 failures? So, I mean, if you think about it, like if that win percentage isn't that high, like you miss a lot to get 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And 22, I can just be honest with you, that year, I can count like four I missed that year and by slim margins. And you got to have the back, you know, things got to be working the right. There's so much stuff that goes into it. So, but for Stray, hey, we all have the same rules in place, kind of. And he has it. I'm sure all the old school guys, back before they counted sacks, I'm sure they're probably saying, hey, I'm the leader. Or, you know, you look at, I think even like Lawrence Taylor, I think, you know, they didn't start counting sacks like the second or third year of his career. So what could he have had? So, man, I think it's all subjective, but it is what it is. I would love to have it, but you know, hats off to Stray. He still owns it and probably will for a while.
I grew up in the Reggie White era, so that was somebody in Philly watching him, the Minister of Defense. Like, who was the guy that you maybe modeled your game after, looked at, and said, like, that's a beast, that's a guy I want to play like?
So I used to watch 100 Toughest Men from that era, like, all the time, right? And but for me, I tried to model my game. Not necessarily, I was a huge Bills fan and Raiders fan growing up, right? So, like, Cornelius Bennett was an absolute stud. Howie Long. I mean, you got to respect, you know, the, what's his name? Haley coming off the edge for the Niners. Charles Hill. Sorry, there we go. Yes, I mean, there's so many guys. You look at, dude, Greg Lloyd was that dude was a madman. And so I didn't really have a model. And those guys were more mindsets I tried to model myself after, right? Like that never stop mentality, the Jack Youngbloods of the world, Jack Lamberts, playing through anything, that mental toughness, that mental fortitude. And then as I got into college and really started learning and honing techniques and understanding, and my first few years in the league, understanding technicians, guys like Julius Peppers, I watched so much film on him. Derek Thomas, I watched so much film on him. Leslie O'Neill, watched a ton of film on him. And even guys, you know, that I didn't emulate after, like Reggie White, that dude could throw a left hook and knock you into, you know, the end zone. That wasn't me. I wasn't a hunk. I'm a leverage technique. I'm going to trap an elbow, flip a hip, hand fight you, you know, long arm you, get up underneath the pads. So, you know, I was more of a leverage technique guy, and where some of these guys, you know, I never had a hunk move, never really had a spin move. So, you know, guys like Farini, I didn't really pay attention to. DeMarcus Ware and I, you know, I was in before him, but our careers modeled each other very similar because I think we played very similar. But yeah, so guys like Peppers, guys like Jason Taylor were huge influences on my career. I'm trying to, you know, but again, early on, I mean, one thing I learned from Derek Thomas is that dude never got off on the ball, right? He always watched the quarterback's hands. And so I could never fathom how fast this guy was off the ball. And then my coach was like, he's watching the quarterback's hands. And 90% of quarterbacks will drop their bottom hand right before the ball's going to be snapped, right? And so I adopted that in my game. You know, Chris Dolman, when I got to the Vikings, spent time with him, and just watching how that dude could dip, you know, being able to dip and be flexible and turn. So, yeah, I mean, so many, not one particular, but so many greats that I adapted little things off, whether it was a mindset, whether it was technique or the ability just to get the job done by any means necessary.
Who were the toughest guys? Was it for you guys like Vic who could run around, or guys with the quick release like Rodgers who could just get rid of the ball like that?
It's the guys with quick release, right? So the reason you have, you know, Brady, so Aaron's release is quick, but what Aaron gets, he used to get sacked a lot, right? Because he has that ability to fling the ball 100 yards down the field. So he'll also hold that. So sometimes the great quarterbacks will give you more opportunities because they'll hold the ball longer, knowing that they can make a play down the field. Like, you know, Roethlisberger, right? Roethlisberger actually will hold the ball a lot because the dude's so big and strong. He can use to break the tackle and make a bomb down the field. So, guys with like that got the ball out in like under two. So, you know, Drew Brees is so hard to get to because even though he's short, he sits no more than 5.5 yards at those launch points, you know, back in the pocket. And now you're like, well, okay, I gotta try to take an inside move to get to him. Now I got a guard. So the guys that know how to work their own line and really sit in that pocket, Peyton balls out so fast, you know what I mean? Guys like that. So Vic was so tough because he was athletic, but Vic was also more predictable. You know, we knew with him, just blitz the house. And, you know, if he's going to beat you, that's it. But you just zero blitz that guy pretty much the whole game. And you could get to him just because, you know, you just don't miss your tackle. I mean, it's a feast or famine with him. But yeah, it's those quick releases, the ones that really eat you up. And then from a lineman standpoint, it's actually the guys with not the greatest technique. There's only a handful of tackles that are so athletic and so, you know, technique and that have a way of playing that make it difficult. But some of the toughest ones are guys that are just in your way, you know, guys that just float back, absorb you, aren't going to really shoot your hands because, you know, technique will beat technique, where sometimes you get a guy who's just in your way plus a quarterback that gets rid of the ball fast. It can get frustrating. And then, you know, guys think they're better than they are. And then you got to remind them that they're not. And then there's that whole game you got to play.
Were you a trash talker, Jack? Like, how much was that part of your game?
A lot. a lot. You know, it was made a little harder. I quit cussing like 2008, 2009.
Yeah, I want to get into that later.
Yeah, made it a little harder to talk trash. But yeah, it was. I've been known to hurt some feelings on the field.
Rivers is known for, he's the same way. Didn't use any foul language, any expletives. But yeah, I think dadgummit was his word, but he was notorious, you know, right?
Me and Philip had many of back and forth. And that was when my mouth wasn't so clean. So you can imagine some of the things that came out of my mouth. I remember a couple of times you say something, you both just have to start laughing because you're like, did you really just say it? Yeah, I crossed the line. That was too far.
Well, you finally made it to a Super Bowl, right? Your final season with Carolina. What was that experience like after playing, you know, Kansas City, Minnesota, and everything to get there with a team like Carolina that had a tremendous season? And then you're going up against Peyton Manning, who's at the end of his career. What was that whole experience like for you?
It was surreal because, you know, I was retiring after I, you know, left Minnesota 10 years, and Chicago gave me an offer I couldn't really say no to. And then, you know, I got injured in Chicago. You know, it just kind of was, you know, dealing. I ripped my L5 twice my last year. Then I got to Carolina. I was like, super excited to be there, to get my hand back in the dirt and finish my career out there. I really just wanted to have fun, you know? So I tell you what, it was an amazing season because, well, my first walk through there, getting ready to go play Tampa, I get, my hip gets banged and I rupture my L5 again. You know, couldn't lift my heel off the ground for like 3 weeks. So I was dealing with that. And, you know, but I tell you what, I preface it all the time. I say, the good Lord always puts you where you need to be. Right. And the whole reason I played a couple more years, because my last year or so in Minnesota, like, football just wasn't fun. I mean, you're losing, you know, you've got coaches turnover, and you're just in this place where you go from, you know, being up at the top and you're watching the team that you helped build to the NFC title game, you know, slowly kind of decline. And so I told my wife, I just want to have fun playing football again. And then, you know, the Chicago, you know, kind of debacle, we lost the coach there, and you're back in, you know, another coaching transition. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. And when I got to Carolina, it was exactly what we were looking for. Man, that team was so fun. Coach Rivera, he has such a great way of understanding how he has full absolute control of his team, yet he has a locker room system that is led by the veterans, right? And you got enough young guys to keep it fresh and keep it fun. And I tell people all the time, I said, it's amazing that if you look, the most success that I had in my career was with Carolina based on the fact that we went to the Super Bowl. And that's ultimately, as a team sport, that's the best growth. But it was the least success I had, you know, individual stats. And I said, sometimes it takes that. It takes that humbling, you know, you're beat down, you're beat up, but then you're reminded, like, man, I had so much fun in this run to the Super Bowl. And yeah, that's all I can say, man. Like, that team will always be special to me just because of the camaraderie. They opened me, they welcomed me with open arms. The coaching staff there was great. The players are great. And even though we didn't win it, it was one of some of the most fun I had playing football. And, you know, again, it's like I said, so that's that experience. Although it's kind of surreal too, because I got to end my career back in the Bay Area where I'm from, and my first start was against Peyton Manning, and my last start was against Peyton Manning. I won the first one; he won the last one for the Super Bowl. So, wow. One thing I can say, we could switch those. It would have been a perfect career.
Well, Jared, you're a finalist for Pro Football Hall of Fame. What would it mean to you to put on that gold jacket, to be enshrined in Canton?
Man, I don't know that you can describe it in words. I think it's going to be, this whole process has just been kind of humbling because, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, right? The resume is written in stone. It is what it is. And it's for the voters to judge how that holds up. And to be in this situation, to be a finalist in my first year of eligibility is humbling enough. And it's been awesome. But I think the gold jacket to me is that symbol of finality, I guess, if you want to say. It's a symbol of just a job well done. It's the recognition that, you know, you did it the right way, but more so it represents everybody that's been on that journey with me, you know, or whoever has the gold jacket, in my opinion. You know, I'd be lying if I said I got here by myself. I mean, any athlete of any sport, you know, from when I was little to the end, you know, between coaches and family and friends and just different, you know, players and mentors and stuff like that. I mean, there's so many people that helped me to achieve the level that, you know, I was able to play at, that, you know, that's to me, I think, is what it would represent. That jacket would represent every blood, sweat, tear of every single person that put an ounce of energy into me to help me get to meet my goals. And to me, I think that's going to be the greatest thing is to be able to thank them and let them see that and represent that with them as well. So, it'd be amazing. And it'd be one of those honors that, you know, be right up there with getting married and having kids.
What are you doing now? I know you were involved in curling. Is that something that you're still doing, pursuing? And how did you
get it? I took a bet, and then, you know, I don't like the welch on a bet, so I go all in once I'm in. And still doing it. COVID's got everything on hold right now, so trying to figure out what that next phase looks like. But, yeah, I'm in constant contact with the team and guys in the curling world still seeing what's going on. But yeah, you know, I still got to try to win this bet.
Can you share a little info on the bet? Like what was the
info? Oh, just the sum of money. Just,
okay. You know, that, some former players too. Like Mark Bulger was.
Yeah. I formed my team with former players. It was, you know, Mark Bulger, Keith Bullock was on it for a while. It got can be a little bigger time commitment than he could take on, but you know, he still stays in touch. And Michael Roos. And then we brought on a skip who was a 2010 Olympian, Jason Smith. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of like football. Just kind of finding the right players, the right fit to get you to the ultimate goal. So we'll see how we come out of COVID and how it looks.
Yeah, what inspired you to launch your foundation, the Jared Allen Homes for Wounded Warriors? What was kind of behind that, and what are some of the things that you guys are doing?
So, yeah, I started my foundation in 2009. I came back from a USO tour and just knew I had to do something to help, you know, our men and women out. The idea was presented to me by a buddy of mine back in like 2000, I think probably 2006, 2007. He let me know about the gap in adaptive housing. He was an Army guy. And you know, I just kind of wasn't at a place in my career to really set up and focus on a foundation. My family is all military. So my grandfather was 23 years a Marine, my little brother's a Marine, like, you know, I have great respect. And my uncles are all, you know, in the military. So I had great respect for the military growing up. I always knew that they were the reason why I got to do what I got to do. And so when I got back in 2009, I just knew it was time to do something, right? To say thank you. And so the best way I figured I could say thank you was, you know, to serve those who serve us. And you know, we kind of went down and when, you know, I went back and remembered, you know, what my buddy had told me about the gap in adaptive housing. We dug into that a little bit. I figured, you know, nobody deserves a home more than the men and women who fight for that American dream, right? So what's my American dream? It's a functional home for me and my family. My home is my safest place and my most insecure time, or most vulnerable time. And so that's what we wanted to give to our men and women that came back with severe injuries. And so we've been able to do that. We've delivered. I actually just gave another home away down in Florida, goodness, 3 days ago, I'm trying to think, 2 or 3 days ago. We've given away 17. We have five. We're building five right now. We got two brand new recipients. So we've been going along, but yeah, that's the Cliff Note version. It's just my way of saying thank you. And it's my way of, you know, giving a little slice of the American dream of those men and women that protect it and fight for it and are the reason why we have it in the first place.
Well, I love that, man. That's awesome. I know you're a man of faith, and I want to ask you about something I heard you say at one point. It was, I think, a team chaplain, and it kind of moved you. And the quote was, if you were arrested for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? What was going through your life at that moment, and what was going through your mind when you heard that, and how did it impact you?
Well, yeah, it was very impactful from the standpoint of, you know, I grew up in the church, and obviously, you know, I try to tell people, I you know, some people had the big God moment. I've never had that. Like I said, I grew up in the church and grew up knowing that believing in God made more sense than not believing in God. And, but, you know, I laughed at Joe. I said, you know, I always had that, you know, that heart rate monitor, you know, you're young and you're out there, you know, Jesus, you go to church, you understand exactly who he is, but you're still out having fun. And, you know, Saturday morning, you're like, oh Lord, get me through this one. I won't do it again. You know? I think, you know, going back my last year in Kansas City really started to hone in, you know, after, you know, I got in some trouble. I just, you know, talking with, you know, friends and family and my pastor growing up, my best friend's dad, he's passed now, but he said to me, he said, Jared, we need more moral heroes. So either you're a jerk and that's who you are, be who you are, right? But if you claim to be a man of faith, who I know you to be, you grew up, you know, you have a good foundation, right? Then that's who you need to be. So that's what really started it. But, you know, I still cuss, like I said. I think I think part of it was I still thought that if people knew I was a Christian, you know, the fact that I like, you know, go out and have a cold beer or something like that, you're going to be judged. You know, I think too many people, they view themselves as a Christian through how they think the secular world is going to view them versus understanding what's in your word and understanding, you know, how God views you, right? And so Jeff Seaman, I'll never forget it. We're sitting in Chapel, Minnesota. And you know, and like I said, I'd started diving back to my faith a little in 07 and stuff like that. But it was, you know, 08 when I was there, you know, Tom Manfiore, our chaplain, and I remember he invited me to Bible study and I totally spaced on it. I never got to go. So I guilted myself into going the following week. But Jeff Seaman said, it was the chaplain, exactly your quote was, if you were arrested for being a Christian, is there enough evidence to convict you? And I weighed on me. I was in my room that night and I was just like, there's not, I mean, I cuss like a sailor. Like my closest friends and family know I love the Lord. Right. You know, I was starting to get back into my Bible and read more, but I was like, man, I cuss like a sailor. And so I just decided, you know what, I'm going to, you know, if the one thing I can do, you know, in James, he talks about, you know, controlling your tongue, right. How we praise the Lord and then we curse our fellow man or curse our brothers. And that was the one thing I thought I could do. If I could make little change, if I could slowly start to change the way I speak, you know, maybe then, you know, that it in again. So I started making little changes like that. And so I tried to quit cursing just because, you know, I felt, you know, you need to represent who you are on the inside. If I'm a man of faith, you need to represent that outwardly. Right. And I don't think people need to go Bible beat people to death because another great line I heard one time, loving the Lord is like, you know, it's like loving steak, right? If somebody that's never had a steak before, if you go put a bunch of salt on it, they're never going to eat steak again. But if you give them the word and slow and let it cultivate and let them realize and understand what their personal relationship with Christ is and what the Bible, you know, means to them and yada, yada, that it's more authentic, obviously. And people grow up more thirsty for it. But yeah, that was it. And so I made it. And then I just, you know, again, by making small little impact changes in my life, I realized the smaller changes I made had a greater impact. And I think too many people try to, like I said, cold turkey doing something, or they have this perception of what they think their pastor thinks they need to be, or what they think the world as a Christian views them to be. And you're never going to live up to that. Right. You know, the best thing I could describe it. And as I got more into my word and like I brought up the Bible study thing, because then, you know, I was like, crap, I forgot to go to Bible study. And I felt bad. And it's like, man, I want to be prepared when I go to Bible study. So now you're reading so you're spending that time of the week in that chapter that you're reading. And then slowly develop habits. I try to get up in the morning, read my Bible every morning and start my day with that. And again, once the more depth they got in the word, the more strength I got is I don't care what people think of me, right? Like I genuinely don't care. Like I'm good here. I don't need to be good out there. So, you know, so that, so I think that, you know, really just changed my mindset. But that one chapel was really impactful because it was more of a, you know, what you're doing internally needs to show externally, and you know, and then, you know, obviously live out the word of God and all that good stuff. So yeah, that's the Cliff Note version of kind of what took place.
Jared, that's awesome, man. I appreciate it. Like you just said, you know, if you live your life to please other people, you probably aren't going to be pleasing God. So great stuff, man. And thank you. And good luck with the Hall of Fame. I hope to see you. It's going to be different this year. Usually it's Saturday night, the night before too. It's going to be different, but hopefully you get that call.
Absolutely. We'll see. Either way, I said the plus is that I don't have to sit in a room and wait for a knock or a phone call now. So.
there's always something.
There's always a positive. There's always a positive. My wife jokes and says selfishly, she goes, if you get in next year, at least we can all gather and enjoy the whole experience.
In LA too, right? It's not bad. Appreciate it, Jack.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
That was NFL legend Jared Allen. This is Faith on a Field Show with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Caron University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Caron is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Caron is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at caron.edu/visit.
With 33 convenient locations, Heritage's Dairy Stores desire to be your deli of choice. Heritage's full-service delis offer great-tasting products for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Hera Egg Breakfast Sandwich made with 2 farm-fresh eggs, cheese, and choice meat on a fresh Kaiser roll makes your morning simple. Heritage's famous subs are built on freshly baked Lissio rolls and feature Dietz & Watson premium meats and cheeses freshly sliced anytime. Making lunches at home? Try one of our lunchbox specials, which are sure to please. Heritage's Dairy Stores, our family, your hometown deli.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc. is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have 2 daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
This is Emmitt Smith. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show. I'm Rob Motti with Remy. I want to take a minute to thank our awesome sponsors. Please check them out on our website, Karen University, Heritage's Dairy Stores, Brenda Lee Utzler, and Associates. If you would like to be a sponsor for our show, please reach out to us at team@faithonthefieldshow.com. We've got various packages for all of the radio stations. We can also do podcasts, social media, video clips of our interviews. There's a ton of different ways that you can partner up with Faith on the Field and help us grow our ministry. Our goal is to be on a sports radio station in every state. And if you don't have a business to advertise on, but you just want to help our ministry grow, we now have a donate button on our page on faithonthefieldshow.com. And also, we've recently added, you can help our ministry by purchasing some of our new merchandise through Remy's 828 Threads Apparel store. We have t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, and so much more. The My Story, His Glory t-shirt is very popular. We have a new design that's got a football helmet, and it says, "I wear the helmet of salvation," which we took from Ephesians 6:17. So check that out on our website, also at faithonthefieldshow.com. You can look under merch and all over our social media. You can also find that stuff too. Thank you to NFL legend Jared Allen for being our guest this week. Big thanks to Doug Horton and Pastor Scott Foreman for all their hard work for Faith on the Field Show. Thank you also to 97.5 The Fanatic Philadelphia, 97.9 ESPN Tallahassee, 107.5 Alive, and Rhythm Mix Radio for airing Faith on the Field Show. For Remy, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.